Olá, sou Cristina Duarte, sou de Lisboa e viajo com Rick Steves. Hi, I'm Cristina Duarte. I'm from Lisbon and I travel with Rick Steves. Olá, sou Cristina Duarte, sou portuguesa e viajo com Rick Steves.
A few years ago, National Geographic sent Scott Wallace to the Amazon to document the journey of a Brazilian explorer, Sidney Pozuelo, who was attempting to track one of the last uncontacted tribes on the planet. Pozuelo's mission, to safeguard the isolation of the indigenous flecheros, or arrow people, who live completely cut off from the modern world. Scott Wallace spent 3 months in the Amazon jungle with Pozuelo, and he chronicles this harrowing experience in his new book, The Unconquered, In Search of the Amazon's Last Uncontacted Tribes. Scott Wallace joins us now to tell us about this experience. Scott, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get into this particular tribe in the Amazon, what's the state of the remote, uncontacted tribes on this planet right now? Where are they? Are there many left?
Actually, in Brazil, there are 26 confirmed groups of uncontacted Indians. In Peru, there are another 14 or 15. And Bolivia and Ecuador each have a couple, and there might be a couple still in Colombia and Venezuela. And there are a couple in the Andaman Islands, in the midst of the Andaman Sea in the Indian Ocean. There might still be, possibly, a tribe left in New Guinea, possibly one in the Congo. But the great preponderance of them is in the Amazon. And in the area that we went into to look for the arrow people, that has the highest density of uncontacted tribes anywhere.
What is the ethics of contacting these people? What do anthropologists think? Is it best to help them somehow, or is it best to just let them be?
There's a polemic about this, but Sidney Pozuelo, the man who I accompanied on this amazing journey into the deepest redoubts of the Amazon, founded and directed, at the time of the expedition, the Department of Isolated Indians within Brazil's Indian Affairs Agency. And the work of the Department of Isolated Indians and the philosophy that guides it is to actually leave these people alone, to not contact them, and to protect them from those who would contact them, giving them, in theory, the choice, the tribes, the choice of when and where and if they would like to be contacted, for them to come out of the forest, if you will. But Pozuelo's philosophy is leave them alone, but in order to leave them alone, you need to know where they are to get protection for their lands. So that's what we were up to.
You were there for 3 months, and you were quite close to Sidney Pozuelo, who apparently is just the guy on this topic. Did you have a sense that these uncontacted tribes knew about the outside world? What is your hunch about their perspective on all of this? What do they know?
So Pozuelo, you know, has spent 40 years or more in the Amazonian jungles and has a lot of experience with these kinds of situations, had notched 7 first contacts of his own before he led this change in Brazilian government policy to not contact these groups. What he said was that these tribes would have some glancing knowledge of the outside world. They would know that whites were dangerous. They would have some notion of what firearms are because they've been shot at. But the only dialogue, at least for example with the arrow people, the only dialogue between them and the outside world has been one of flying bullets in one direction and flying arrows in the other. They would know that there is an outside world, but they would have very little concept of how big it is. They would know that we were outsiders, perhaps populating a couple of rivers, not having any clue as to how big the world is out there.
It's an amazing thing. I'm Rick Steves. We're speaking with Scott Wallace in his book, The Unconquered, In Search of the Amazon's Last Uncontacted Tribes. Scott, when you think about these tribes, there's no trading, there's no missionary contact. They might have run across a road one day when they ventured outside of their territory or something, but do they have any indirect contact with the West, or how does that work?
Well, it depends on the groups. Not all the groups are in the same situation. The Arrow people are extremely cut off from the outside world. They live in a realm where there are few possibilities of intrusions, I think. There's not any road near them. Mm-hmm. They stay away from the major rivers. Some of the other tribes are probably in a more vulnerable situation. They may have come out onto roads, and they may, in fact, some of them be in a state of constant flight, fleeing from encroaching chainsaws, bulldozers, and the advancing frontier. They would have, in the past, most of these tribes, if not all of them, those that are hiding, appear to be hiding from the outside world, experienced violent clashes with the encroaching, you know, white dominant Western society at some point in the past. These groups are believed to be the descendants of the survivors of bloody clashes, massacres, and efforts to enslave them that took place at some point in the past. And so they have this kind of notion of us being a danger and a threat to them, and they are hiding in the deepest redoubts of the Amazon.
So these are remnants of larger civilizations that survived some horrific massacre, and now they camping out far away, and they probably have in their folk legends scary ideas of the threats that lurk outside of their little zone.
I think that's entirely correct.
You know, reading your book, it was engrossing, because one minute it seemed like you were seeking out the tribe and on their trail, and then the next minute you were avoiding them. It seems like they were always apparent that they were around you, but it was like the jungle was the ally of the tribe, and you and your gang were sort of doing this very delicate dance in the middle of the jungle.
Definitely. It was like an extremely strange and dangerous dance that we were locked in with the Arrow people. They clearly, at a certain point, came to know that we were there, although I have to say that we penetrated rather deeply into their territory before they did detect us. Once they did, the tensions heightened significantly, and they, you know, left several clues around that they were not happy about our presence.
You wrote about a broken branch that was kind of a don't go beyond this point that Pozuelo really understood right away. And that seemed like sort of an ominous thing.
Our journey unfolded in a series of stages with a couple of weeks of river travel up into the headwaters of one river, and then our overland trek through very arduous terrain began. And 3 weeks into that overland trek, as we were bushwhacking through very dense jungle with lead scouts slashing open the jungle with their machetes and us following single file through this rugged terrain, we came upon a footpath as well-trammeled as like the Appalachian Trail. And we followed that for a while because Pozuelo consulted his compass and it seemed to be leading in the same direction he wanted us to go in. And we had been on this path for, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes or so when we came to this sapling that was dangling by a shred of bark across the path, which Pozuelo instantly recognized as a warning from the Arrow people to go no further. And he said, let's not go any further. We want to respect their wishes. And he directed us off the path at a right angle at that point.
And it was odd for me when I read your book that, you know, you're the modern explorers with your GPS gear and your radios and your probably some weaponry and everything. And these guys just had arrows, yet they were very potent. Explain why they're called the Arrow people.
Yeah. In fact, nobody knows what they call themselves because there's never been peaceful contact with them. They are referred to as the Flecheros, the Arrow people, by those who inhabit the jungles adjacent to their lands, other indigenous tribes, in fact, because of their reputation as fierce warriors who repel all intrusions into their lands with their poison-tipped arrows. So that's why they are known as the Arrow people. It's actually more of a technological distinction to distinguish them from other groups who are in those jungles. The head bashers, who are the Kurubo Indians who use war clubs to attack unsuspecting intruders into their territory. So The Arrow people have this reputation as fierce warriors who use their arrows to defend their territory. We did have firearms, you're correct. We had radio and a GPS, although in the dense jungle under the canopy, those things don't work. We did have firearms for hunting and to possibly repel an attack, but only by firing warning shots in the air. The guiding principle of Brazil's Indian Affairs Agency is die if you must, but never kill. And so the standing orders were, if we were to be attacked, to fire warning shots only in the air, never directly on the Arrow people.
Wow. When you're following Sidney Pozuelo around, you could get your head bashed or your body riddled with poison arrows, depending on which tribe you encounter.
That's right.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Scott Wallace, who's finished a three-month incredible journey in the far reaches of the Amazon. His book is called The Unconquered, In Search of the Amazon's Last Uncontacted Tribes. Scott, you were talking about they knew you were following them. How did you know they knew you were following them?
Well, at one point, we almost stumbled right upon a couple of them, and they took off running. There were two of them. We saw a fresh footprint in the mud. That was the first clue. And then we actually heard their voices up ahead. And Pozuelo had 20 Indians from three different tribes, friendly tribes, with us, with a representation of different indigenous languages, thinking Pozuelo's calculus was that perhaps one of the three languages that we had represented in our expedition might be close enough to the Arrow people's language to be able to communicate with them to defuse a potentially violent situation. Anyway, Pozuelo called one of each of the three tribes that we had with us to the front of our column to call out into the forest to say, you know, Pozuelo said, you know, tell them we're here in peace. We're not going to harm them. We're just passing through. And each of our, you know, there was a Matisse, a Marubo, and a Kanamarie with us at that point who called out into the jungle. And these Indians that had seen us took off running, and they dashed across a makeshift bridge, a log that had fallen across a river, and disappeared into the forest on the far side of the river. From that point on, Pozuelo said, you know, these guys are going to be going straight back to their village to report on what they've seen. And we knew at that point that we were going to be followed the rest of the way as we trekked through their land.
It's fascinating to hang out with Pozuelo and his gang of jungle experts.
Indeed. In fact, as we went deeper into the land of the Arrow people, we'd see what they call vestiges of the people living there, the Arrow people, you know, abandoned fishing camps, discarded baskets and things of that nature. And our scouts could look at these things and instantly date them. And they would say, you know, this is 2 months old or this is a week old, until we saw those footprints. These are from right now.
Right now. It's interesting, as I read through this book, you never really sat down and had lunch with these guys. And that wasn't a failure. You set out to find them, but you didn't actually want to encounter them. What was your agenda? Was it successful?
Indeed, it was. The objective was to avoid making contact while gathering information about them. So Pozuelo wanted to map the extent of their territory, the extent of their seasonal wanderings, in order to bolster protection for their land and to keep contact with the outside world from occurring. So, in fact, we did not want to make contact with them, but in order to do what we set out to do, you risk actually making the contact. That's why this is such a strange dance. And no, we never did sit down and have lunch with them. And that, in fact, in some very significant ways, would have represented a failure of the mission.
Yeah. I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're speaking with Scott Wallace, his book, The Unconquered, In Search of the Amazon's Last Uncontacted Tribes. Scott, I couldn't help when I was reading the book to think of the steady encroachment of modern industry, logging and modern roads and so on. What were your thoughts when you were out there about this sort of big picture dynamic pushing these last fragile little tribes into the last remaining corners of this planet?
Yeah, you get a sense when you're out there that, one, this is a magnificent wilderness that needs to be preserved if at all possible, but at the same time, you see the encroachment going on. Fortunately, in the area that we were trekking in, the Valley do Javari, the Javari Valley, it's one of the largest unbroken wilderness jungle habitats on the earth. It's got a fair degree of protection, which hopefully will translate into many more years of maintaining this spectacular wilderness, which is also quite terrifying, I should add.
Yeah.
It's an area where, you know, we are not necessarily at the top of the food chain. But you do know, I mean, I've seen plenty of areas in the Amazon where the forests are getting pushed back at alarming rates and scattering these tribes who are definitely on the run from the chainsaws and bulldozers, and they will you know, some of these groups are bound to disappear in our generation, I think. It's a real tragedy.
It sounds like Brazil is taking this challenge seriously and actually doing an admirable job of trying to hold the line.
I would say they are, although the record is spotty. While they have this great policy to protect the uncontacted tribes on the one hand, there are also plans on the drawing board for huge development projects, which will ultimately affect these tribes, too.
I'm sure there's a lot of corporate interests up against that idealism.
Indeed.
Scott, when you were writing, how were you inspired by just being under that canopy and working with Indians in your crew who were probably at ease while you were eating just the most bizarre food and experiencing not being on the top of the food chain?
Yeah, thank you. Well, my mission was to document this journey in meticulous detail. That's what I came to understand my mission to be. I was there to write about Sidney Pozuelo, but also to just document this incredible journey and this amazing wilderness and the indigenous people and the other scouts who were with us. And that was really my mission. So that's what I had to do. So I took meticulous notes. I had to protect my notebooks in Ziploc bags, and I was very careful about trying to keep sweat from my hands and my legs and all the moisture from damaging those notes. But that was my mission, to take notes. And I was fortunate also to have a great hammock that I would recline in at night, protected from all the dangers of the jungle, the snakes and the bugs and the vampire bats. And I would lie in that cocoon and write before I turned in every night. I would write as much as I could.
A lot of us just love to go camping, and I couldn't help but think about sitting around the campfire with you and those men who were on your team with bones in their noses and all the noises in the darkness.
Yeah, I would be sitting there around the fire, and there were, you know, the fire would illuminate all the faces sitting around the campfire with an orange glow that flickered, and you'd hear a chorus of crickets and cicadas and bugs and frogs all together in this very loud kind of cacophony. And you just had a sense, looking around the campfire and hearing the conversations in different indigenous languages, and Pozuelo telling stories about jaguars that he'd encountered, and everyone kind of trading these stories from the forest, that this was like you were lost in time. Like this could have been something that happened 300 or 400 years ago in some other location. There's just an enormous sense of mystery and depth to time that I felt in the midst of the forest with these people.
And Scott Wallace was there with his notepad, writing by the flickering fire so we could read The Unconquered, in search of the Amazon's last uncontacted tribes. Scott, what an adventure. Thanks for sharing it.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
When we are done, the story is over. Generations sand we swept away to make another garden a desert blister. Forgive me if I say there's a lot to learn before you can say we got to live your way.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Europe Through the Back Door in Edmonds, Washington, by Tim Tatton with Sarah McCormick. Thanks to our colleagues at OPB Radio in Portland and at National Public Radio in Washington for their help today. You'll find program extras and links to our guests behind the radio tab at ricksteves.com. Rick has also voiced guided walking tours to many of Europe's most popular sites. Look for the Rick Steves Audio Europe package on our website. And we'll look for you again next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.